Yes, you eloquently represent the position that language was invented in order to lie. Right? Well, that's what the second guy who got a hold of it, I'm sure, probably did with it. You're right that I have an incredible enthusiasm for verbal speech, but it's only because it's easy for me to do. If I didn't do this, I'd have to find honest work. However, I'm very aware of the limitations of language, and one of the things I've talked about a lot is what I call visible language. You used the example of telepathy, that if we were in telepathic communication, how could I lie? Because you would perceive my intent. The key to making language more true is to make it more visual. Now, that can't just take the form of a bigger vocabulary and more colorful metaphors. Like people will say, when he spoke, he painted a picture. Or listening to him was like watching a movie. I think ordinary speech goes through a series of stages from articulate to eloquent to poetic to demagogic. And demagogic is where you want to be careful because then you can turn, you know, essentially Hitler turned history on its head with speeches. He just could really deliver a stem winder. I've been fascinated by the fact that in the Amazon, under the influence of ayahuasca, people sing songs, but they see the song they sing. And when you hear people talking about it afterwards, people will say, after listening to a song, you know, I love the part with the olive drab and the chrome, but I thought when he got into the magenta and yellow stripe thing, it was just too much. Well, this is a critique of a song? And then when you take ayahuasca with these people, you discover to your amazement that is a blue ribbon a foot across that descends from floor to ceiling and has a yellow center. And then puts knobs in the ribbon. And you can start singing and building, modeling, animating in three dimensions with sound. Well, I maintain that our insistence technologically on pushing our media toward ever more immediate sensations, so that if we have photography, it's black and white, we demand color. If it's color, we demand motion. If it's motion, we demand sound. If it's sound and motion, we want 3D. It's that we trust our eyes. And the natural domain of communication is visual for human beings. We're like octopi in that way. So really, language needs to evolve toward the visual. And that's why I'm very keen for technically dense prosthetic environments where every time you say the word and, a yellow three-dimensional triangle appears in the air. Every time you say or, an orange ball appears. A computer is listening to what you're saying and giving a geometric accompaniment to speech. I think that there are forms of telepathy that we can evolve through the use of drugs and computer-assisted technologies that will allow us to see each other's dreams. In spite of your correct assessment that I'm keen for the spoken word, I spend all summer learning modeling and three-dimensional animation programs from my son because I want to animate. I want to model. I see things on my trips that I have never been able to English, but that if I were a fully competent modeler and animator, I would just say, check it out. And I'm going to do that, and I urge you to do that. I mean, it's a funny thing to be told you want to spiritually advance, study 3D animation. But these are the frontiers of communication. We have an obligation to make our language more immediate. It is the most godlike thing we do. If you're looking for the thumbprint of Almighty God on the biological organization of this planet, it is human language. It is a miracle. I don't give a hoot what the dolphins and the honeybees are out there in the woods doing. It ain't like Milton. It ain't even like Bob Dylan. It ain't even as good as this, I'm willing to say. No, human communication is what we are, and it will lead us to be a symbiotic species if we put the pedal to the metal. For people like yourselves, who I assume to be, no matter how you finagled your way in here this afternoon, part of the upper 3% of the ruling elite on this planet, there is a real obligation to use privilege to communicate and to make art. I think this is what, if the good life has any purpose other than to drink beer and watch TV, it's to produce art. This is how you make a payback into the community. And art is ambiguous. Your art may say things to people other than yourself that it would never say to you. But that's how we make the community richer. That's how we enlarge the dimensions of the human soul, by making art. Yeah. Stand up and yell. Louder. You said, do you take psilocybin and see self-transforming machine elves? No. Yeah? The question is, when you encounter the self-transforming machine elves in hyperspace, do you think that's a reflection of ourselves, or do you think it's an alien, or, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like that? It's tricky, because we are not what we think we are. Maybe I didn't spend enough time on this alien thing. I referred to non-local domains of information. This has to do with this idea in quantum physics that there is something called Bell non-locality, that all particles that were ever associated remain associated in some mysterious way, no matter how far apart in time and space they have drifted. Well, according to the Big Bang, all particles were once closely associated. At the moment of the Big Bang, everything was in a space less than the diameter of the proton, or some piddling distance like that. So then this was an idea that was just thought so outlandish that there could be this instantaneous dimension of connectivity that it was dismissed from quantum physics in favor of an acceptance of a somewhat less outlandish but equally challenging notion, which was the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And that's how it was left for about 40 years. But there were thought experiments that people talked about that could test for this Bell non-locality. Well, eventually, these apparatus were actually built, and these experiments were performed. And what do you know, Joe? Bell non-locality can be demonstrated the same way any other physical phenomenon can be demonstrated, given a sufficiently prepared laboratory situation. It's real. It's not woo-woo. It's actually scientifically true at the fundamental core of physics that all space and all time is in some form of simultaneous connection. Now, it gets a little dicey if you ask questions like, can we use this to get and send information? And I don't want to go into that because I think I already have the answer. No matter how good the arguments against it, I believe this is what the human imagination is. That you have two eyes to show you local space, and then you have an organ called the mind, which doesn't protrude anywhere on the surface of your body, except occasionally in some cases. It will lodge on a surrogate. But generally the mind is invisible, but it gives you non-local data. That's what the imagination is. That's non-local data. Everything in the imagination is real. Somewhere. Somewhere so far away in space and time that it makes absolutely no sense to give it another thought. Ever again. Don't ever think that thought again. But know that everything in the imagination is real. So it's ridiculous to speak of my imagination or the human imagining. There is just the imagination. But see, if all information is there, 99.999% of that information is not intended for human beings and makes no sense whatsoever to us. It's basically static. It's either above or below our cognitive power to organize, and so it is meaningless. But 0.00001% of this non-local data is enough like local data that we can make metaphoric bridges to it and say, well, it was like this, and it was sort of like this, and it was a kind of a this, and it reminded me of something else. And that's the stuff of the imagination. And to the degree that you can accept alien data without freaking out, you can go deeper into the imagination. I have a friend who says of psilocybin mushrooms, every time I take it, my goal is to stand more. And he doesn't mean stand more in terms of dosage. He means stand more in terms of content. Because it can always raise the bar higher than you can jump. I mean, I've had dialogues with it where after hours of dancing mice and personal revelations and kind of a sense of familiarity, I've said to it, well, but what are you really? Show me what you are for yourself. Well, my God, the temperature in the room begins to fall towards zero. Black draperies rise. There's an organ tone that shakes the earth. And after about 30 seconds, I say, hey, enough of what you are for yourself. Let's go back to the dancing mice and the little candies rolling in the dark. And, you know, it knows that you have a limited capacity to absorb its alienness. That's why we have what's called human history. Human history is the process of standing more. And it's now we've sort of come to the short and curly part of the process where they're just around the corner. I mean, all you have to do is smoke a doobie, look out at the evening sky, have a dream, talk to a friend, and the alien is very, very, its trailing aura, or its leading aura, I guess. Its leading aura has now intersected human psychology. But cheerful stories of space brothers and scary, silly stories of fetal trading, high technology freaks in league with the government, hey, it's so much bigger than that. It's so big that it has disguised itself as an alien invasion to keep from really alarming us with what it really is. How are we doing? Couple more questions.
If you could come to the microphone so the tape recorders could pick it up.
A lady, yes. Would you like to come up and we'll get you on tape here.
I was just wondering what you thought about the possibility of as we become more aware of what we're doing to the environment and the responsibility of those industrialized nations that are consuming more than their share, that if we could get on an equal playing field, then those underdeveloped countries that have a great deal of the resources that they're using up to basically pay their national debts, if they could receive technology so that they can be on an equal playing field on the internet, et cetera, in exchange for our consumption, that it might be an interesting evolution in terms of...
Well, I think it's happening. In other words, some people have objected that the internet and computers are an elitist technology in the hands of a bunch of white folks. To some degree, that's true. But on the other hand, if the automobile had followed the same curve of cost-benefit that the computer has followed in its development, then the average automobile today would cost $1.50, and it would go 100,000 miles on 10 cents worth of gas. That's the kind of bang for your buck you're getting from the modern PC compared to where it was 35 years ago. No technology in history has had its costs fall so quickly. And there is no reason to think that those costs will level off. If a good PC today is $1,400, there's no reason why in 5 years it shouldn't be $140, and there's no reason why in 10 years it shouldn't be $14 and be worn on your thumbnail. This can all be done. All these prices are artificially inflated. The other thing about the internet is it is going wireless. And as it goes wireless, it goes totally global. If I can just brag for a minute and make an example of myself, I have a wireless connection to the internet. At first, I got a wireless connection because I couldn't get any other kind because I lived way up in a volcano. But now, my wireless connection is 1 megabyte. That's 45 times faster than 28.8. The poor people down on copper, they can't do better than 56 because the infrastructure already exists and therefore limits the bandwidth. By going outside the infrastructure, this sounds like a reprise of my talk, by going outside the infrastructure and building alone from ground up, I suddenly find myself looking down the gun barrel of a T1 connection, and it is heaven itself, let me tell you. And the people who sold it to me, and there must be dozens of other companies, are bent on conquering the world, meaning putting everybody who wants to be online for pennies in the next 5 to 6 years. And, you know, if you live in Manhattan or even Austin, what is the internet? It's another diversion. It's another piece of entertainment. But what is it like in Somalia, in Seychelles, in Bangalore? What kind of impact does it have there? It is, you talk about a culture dissolving effect based on psychedelics. How about a culture dissolving effect based on access to the internet? And people say, well, Western values will swamp all others. Certainly, to some degree, that is true. But did that just begin yesterday? Isn't that what the bloody business has been about for 500 miserable years, ever since the barbarian Cortez arrived in Mexico? I think so. Well, don't get me off on that. One last question. Who's just burning? Anybody burning? There's somebody burning.
So, where do you think we're going to be on December 22nd, 2012?
All together. All together. It's a nice answer. Here's another one. Why have only one answer? It's too early to tell. In other words, asking that question in 1997 is like asking a man looking east at 1 a.m. what he thinks the sunrise will be like. It's just too early. The sun lies over the event horizon of the planet. In other words, we can't see around the corner yet. In terms of our cultural analogous cultural development, right now we've reached approximately the year 1000 AD. And between now and 2012, at an incredibly accelerated rate, we have to do a number of things. Discover the new world, invent the calculus, have the Renaissance, then have the Reformation, then have the Industrial Reformation, then have the 20th century. All that has to be squeezed into the next 14 years. The real outlines of what is tearing toward us will probably be the province of squirrels and visionaries like myself until around 2004 and 5. And by that time, it will be clear to everyone what is on the end of every fork, as William Burroughs once said. In other words, it will be clear that history has been canceled. It will be clear that there is no human future except through hyperspatial breakthrough. We will all be walking around on an internet that is 90% VRML based and hence three-dimensional and interactive. And nanotechnology will be beginning to deliver its goods to society. New forms of propulsion system are going to move the outer planets to within a few weeks' travel, so forth and so on. So we cannot at this moment know the true nature of the eschaton, because at this moment, if we knew the true nature of the eschaton, it would shatter our cultural assumptions and our individual understanding completely. We have a lot of heavy lifting to do. There's a lot of self-education, hard tripping, and heroic dosing that needs to be done before we can meet the eschaton on a level playing field. Be there or be square. Thank you.